Welcome everybody to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built. And if you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. It helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends. Wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere else where you find fine podcast content, you can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who had to work through some feelings working on this preview, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
As we go on, we remember. I'll keep going. All the times we clap in the bar. No, I won't. We could do it. If anyone wants my singing podcast, please message us. No, we're talking running backs, Gerald. And while that's fun and that's exciting, because of the duality of what the two monster figures, personalities, and contributors that we lost, I can't think of a season preview where we had to preview a position with this much in 1 year loss at one position, right? Obviously, the Bijan of it all and the Roshan of it all we'll talk about, but man, this was a tough one. I still remember the crowd chanting Bijan in his last game, and you and I just texting like tear crying emojis. You know, it's going to be different. So we'll dive into it, but it's going to be different.
Top one sports event moment for me. I got to take my son to his first Texas game, and it was the game where the crowd chanted Bijan in his final game in burnt orange. Like, absolutely is seared into my memory every moment watching my 5-year-old son at the time cheering Texas fight. It's just absolutely just top experience of my life, period. But we won't talk about my son too much. We're going to talk about the running backs and how Texas can replicate the production, potentially can't replace those guys. But what's Texas going to do at the running back position? First time Texas has had questions at running back in like 3 years. So let's try to figure that thing out. And then we've got some burnt orange lenses, a lot of things for Texas coming up tangentially Texas related. And we'll close the show out with some Godzillatron. So as we mentioned, and we pulled the scab and the Band-Aid early, you're probably well aware if you're listening to this podcast that Texas is losing the top two offensive players from last year. Like, it's pretty easy to say that Bijan Robinson and Roshan Johnson were the heart and soul of that offense a year ago, really taking up the mantle of leading. There were days where, you know, they both had to put the team on their back to get it done, and they did in a lot of events, you know, to the tune of, you know, several thousand career yards, one of the most productive tandems in school history. So there are big shoes to fill, and it seems like Texas has a bevy of options to choose from. Jonathan Brooks and Keelan Robinson are likely your RBs 1 and 1A, depending on who you think and believe. Jonathan Brooks and Keelan Robinson both flashed at times, and this is an offense that really thrives with a solid, like, number one running back option. You know, Sark does like to pass the ball around between guys, but it's also, Sark has not gone a year as a head coach without like a premier 1,000-yard rusher. So, like, what is your expectation for the room overall?
I was waiting to make this joke the whole time you were talking, was that the answer is maybe we're going to talk about your other son, Jonathan Brooks, who, folks, if you're a longtime listener to this podcast, from the moment he committed as a recruit through every time he's touched the ball the past few seasons to spring appearances, Gerald gets to wear the mantle because he was way out ahead of this. The tour guide, the ticket salesman, the bouncer, and the snack bar manager at the Jonathan Brooks Mountain tourist attraction that has recently been flooded with lookers. It was lonely there for a while with Gerald as the proprietor and the sole amusement park attendee. But no, that was a weird metaphor. But Jonathan Brooks is the name.
You got there. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, thanks. Is the name that you start with, right? And we may differ on this, so I'm actually curious to hear your thoughts before I dive in too much. I think this year is going to be a bit more of committee, where Brooks will be RB1, but I almost feel like it's 1A, 1B, 1C a bit, and there's guys who might push hard on that. And that's not a knock on Brooks. I think he has the talent. He's a high school, you know, football legend in the state of Texas, and has proven it during his time toting the rock at the University of Texas. It's just not as though he has, you know, 200 career carries that he's next man up. He is almost as inexperienced as the freshman coming in, right? There's a sea change in having 4 years of Roschon, program leader, guy who can give it to 100 times a year, and he's going to do something with it. It is a sea change to me from Bijan is the guy. Now, maybe by the end of the year, Jonathan Brooks has so strangled that away from everyone else that he is the guy and it is his. But I do think that this year you're going to see multiple guys out there, either depending on the matchup, depending on the hot hand. I'll talk a little bit more about this when we get into it, but also depending on who's going to be a, you know, great in pass pro in the receiving game, who can offer things so that Stark can use the personnel packages that he wants. But I think Jonathan Brooks is the first name off the team sheet, and I think rightfully so.
I like that you mentioned pass pro in there, because I think that's a big, like, that, and honestly, we could say this, right? Like, for a little bit, that was a question for Bijan, right? And that's part of the reason why Roschon saw the field a lot on third downs, is because he was better in pass pro. And I think even through the end of their, you know, highly touted and highly successful last years, I still think that Roschon was probably the more successful pass rusher. Bijan grew leaps and bounds year to year as in pass protection. But again, I think Roschon Johnson had the edge on him there. I think the one area where Roschon had a clear advantage over Bijan, it's that. And I think for, like, Sark, that's a vital piece of the puzzle, is like, because the pass game is so vital to this offense, and the RPO game is so vital to this offense. Like, are you a guy that can catch the ball? Are you a guy that can pass when the ball's not coming your way? And I think that, you know, frankly, I didn't see a lot that I loved from Keelan Robinson in pass protection. I think some of that's just because he's a smaller guy. He doesn't have as much to do with it, right? Like, he's just smaller than the DNs and the edge rushers and the linebackers that are going to be coming at him. I think Jonathan Brooks, again, he's a young guy, so he's still learning it, but I think he's got a better base on him. I'm curious to see how that shakes out, but I think overall, I would be shocked to see if Sark goes away from what he likes to do, where he has one guy that gets really the lion's share of the touches. And I think, you know, he has, and this is one of those good problems, right? Where, like, last year, and we'll talk about this a little bit, like, Bijan had 270-ish, Roschon had 100, Keelan had 45, and Jonathan Brooks had, like, 30-ish. And so I think we could see those numbers be pretty similar, where, you know, we've got, you know, where one of the guys, again, I think I'm putting my feather, and I'm just going to dance with the one that brung here, right? I've been there since he committed from Hallettsville. The JB2K will be the guy, I think, RB1. My tea leaf tinfoil hat, like, there's a reason why Texas held him out healthy from the spring game, right? I think they know they're going to need him a lot next year. And so, like, my mind is that's where it's going to go. So, Kyle, do you think, like, does Sark break with tradition there, or does he go with, like, a running back by committee situation? Like, what's your gut on that? I shared mine. What's your thought?
Let's take a look at the depth chart, right? Jonathan Brooks is the top of it right now. I think with Keelan Robinson, probably, like I said, like a 1B. They do very different things. Brooks is 6 foot, 200 pounds. He fits the Texas running back mold. He's shaped, you know, like halfway between a Bijan and Roschon, right? He's big. He's not small. He can take some hits. You saw that in high school. He's a guy who has endurance, who can tote the rock. He is bigger than the majority of the rest of the running backs. You have Keelan Robinson at 5'9", 185. Again, that to me, with his speed as well, is a change of pace, is not your third down back who you want blocking. But he also had three touchdowns last year, and a lot of his biggest plays in the pass game, right? Sark could scheme things up, get him out there, and you know he's very quick once he gets that step and he's gone. But again, 5'9", 185 for Keelan. Jaden Blue, people forget a little bit about Jaden until he did what he did in the spring game and looked phenomenal, had the play of the game, I think. He's 6 foot as well, 190, a little bit smaller than Brooks. The interesting thing to me here is CJ Baxter's coming in at like 6'1", 210. He's the tallest, right? Like, he's Bijan Roschon's size, but at 210 as a freshman, you know they're going to sculpt that body. Like, he might end up being, he has the body of a workhorse, the guy who could, you know, play at 220 at 6'1". One of the questions for him was, you know, at that height, can they get his pad level right? And it seems like they're pretty happy with his progress. Like, I could see by the end of the year where, you know, no offense to Blue, Keelan Robinson, Savion Redd, who moved over to running back at all. It could be Jonathan Brooks getting, you know, the first series and C.J. Baxter coming in by the second or third. I do think you're going to see a lot of Baxter, right? There was some questions about whether he moved from a zone scheme to a, you know, from, excuse me, from a gap scheme to in high school to a zone scheme in college. But, he, you know, you've seen a couple clips in the high school All-Star game, right? It was a, an inside zone that he broke for the first touchdown in the All-American game. So, I mean, he's got that read. The coaches seem to love his work ethic. They love that he came, enrolled early, got a 4-0. You know, like, he's doing the things right. And he's just built like a Texas back. And I don't mean that just because he has dreadlocks, but he's, you know, 6'1", 210 as an 18-year-old without what you saw Torrey Becton can do in that quarterback room picture. You saw what he can do to these players, even with just a little time. But certainly as he gets more in, I expect them to be the kind of two bell cows. But I don't want to sit here and say I'm smart enough to know that Jaden Blue isn't going to have a breakout year. Again, what he did in the spring game looked great, right? And you know, he's a little rusty taking his senior year of high school off, so he's almost now at the place where he's like a true freshman coming, and he beat some rust off, and he's got a lot to prove and a lot of talent, you know. I still think Keelan Robinson needs to be on the field 10 to 12 times a game, just, you know, because he can do things that not many other players on the entire roster can do with his change of pace and get up and go speed. So I think there's a lot of value, especially if they mix it up, right? They're gonna come out in 11 personnel this year. We know that. We'll talk tight ends and receivers and how much talent they have to get on the field. But could they go empty, right? They've seen some success with that. Could they have some different packages? Could they go back? Could we see a two back? Last year, they wanted to see two back because your two best players were running backs. I don't think you're necessarily going to see it as anything of a regularity, but could it be a different look in the right situation where you do get Baxter and Brooks out there, or you get Robinson with a Brooks, right? I'm curious. I don't know. I don't think the running back position is a liability, but I do think it is a little bit of a question mark just because we have some unknowns.
Yeah, I think untested, right, is the right way to say it. I think the talent is ridiculous. Like, it's so easy to skip over Jaden Blue and go to Cedric Baxter, but, like, Jaden Blue is the number one running back in the country his junior year. Jaden Blue is a 6'1", 200 kid that also runs a 10.7. Like, he is a dude. And so we don't want to skip over him. And I think he you could tell this offseason he was a little unhappy with how things were going. And he kind of did that Twitter thing where he, you know, teased at and hinted at getting out of town. And that's, you know, that's fine. I think, again, this is one of those good problems to have where it's like there are too many good, talented running backs in the room and not enough touches to go around. And it sucks that, you know, likely you're going to lose either him or Cedric Baxter this offseason. I think money is probably on Jaden Blue, but, like, obviously that's, you know, neither, you know, we'll have that conversation and we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But again, I think this is one of those good problems to have, because I think, you know, moving into next year, you see that Brooks and Cedric Baxter, Brooks and Jaden Blue, whoever the duo is next year, and then Cedric Baxter moves in and you've got other guys coming and waiting in the wings because Tashard Choice can't help himself. I think the one thing we do have to call out is, like, Savion Redd is a guy who you and I love. You know, we've had offline conversations with folks that have said that, like, you know, Savion Redd, if he's at a different school, at a bigger school, he's probably a 4-star kid. And there are coaches that have said things like, if I had a team full of Savion Redds, I'd be doing really well for myself. Right. And so he's a guy who's versatile. He's a guy who he plays with that thing. He plays like he hasn't eaten all week, yeah, is the best way to say it. And yeah, I mean that in a good way. Like, he knows that his next meal depends on this game, and he's going to get his next meal.
Yeah.
And so I think he's a versatile guy that I think Sark, there's a reason why they moved him there, because I think Sark needs a guy who can catch the ball in the backfield, a guy who's willing to get those tough yards. And I think there are, you know, having this bevy of dudes allows you to do some fun things schematically. Do you come out in two back sets? Do you come out in some less predictable wildcat moments? Cough, cough, less predictable wildcat moments, right? And again, having a guy where if you know, Jonathan Brooks is beating on you for three quarters, and then, oh yeah, here's Jaden Blue in the fourth quarter. We're gonna run all over you with fresh legs. Or, oh, here's Cedric Baxter for the middle of the game to keep our number one guy fresh. Like, again, these are good problems to have. I don't know how Sark's gonna manage it. I don't know how Coach Choice is gonna manage it, but I would rather have this than, like, I don't know who's gonna run the ball for us this year. Like, this is one of those good problems.
Yeah, and there's two ways this can go, right? It is the cream rises at the top, and a guy like Savion Red, like, if you say this is completely open, and like you said, these are the metaphor is some junkyard dogs being hungry. You know, Savion Red may be the hungriest dude on the team, not just on this this running back room. He I mean, people, like you said, in high school who watched him just always said, like, if that guy had more opportunities even in high school, he would have been a four, you know, a solid high four star. He is a playmaker, a winner. He'll play quarterback. You want to play quarterback, play running back, he'll go catch passes, he'll do whatever you need. And so that's the world, right, where it's, you know, Blue beats out Baxter, beats out Robinson, beats out Brooks, whatever. Someone steps up and makes this their own, and someone else has to transfer because they don't let it go, whoever that is. There is also the HBO Succession version of this where, you know, you have a vacuum of power at the top, and people, you know, try to step on each other to get up to the front. From what I've seen from the personalities of these players, I don't see that. It does look like they're friends, right? And that's not always the case in a room, but it does look like they get along well and they gas each other up and hype each other up, right? Remember, Keelan Robinson had a chance to be a player at Alabama, and he's one of the three kind of early Bama players who came over to follow Sark. The tight end version and the wide receiver version didn't work out as well. I'm really hoping, like, Keelan can be a feel-good story. In addition to finding his rap career in the city of Austin, I hope that he, you know, can be a feel-good story when he's able to, you know, rattle off 700 yards and 7 touchdowns in not a ton of touches this year and is a game-changer who you have to prepare for, you know, and gets a 75-yard touchdown either in the air or on the ground against OU or something like that. One of those really memorable in the Big 12 championship, sure. Like, I want something like that for him. But just because he doesn't have the body of the player you see to run between the tackles, to take the inside zone, right? I think Brooks fits Sark's system so well. What he does, which is, he's kind of like, he runs like a little bit, I think about like a basketball player who's like at the top setting up the pick and roll a little bit, right? Like, he's going to take a couple long steps to kind of slow it down. And then he's a one cut slasher, right? He's going to, you know, my pick and roll is here. I see the zone here. I'm reading the three technique here and I'm gone. And he's not, you know, a 4.42 guy, but he's football fast. And when he gets on the field and he's strong enough and gets his pads in front of you, you're not going to catch him from behind. He's just going to get downhill, and you better hope your next level is ready, right? He's a great running back for the way that Sark likes to run the football. And so he seems tailor-made. I really do think that he can do it. But you have a chance for Baxter, who looks like an NFL running back and wants, you talk about guys who come to Texas and want to get developed and prepare for the next level. He's a guy who came and committed to Coach Choice because he wants to be coached up to be the next great Texas running back. He wants to be Cedric Benson, Ricky Williams, Bijan Robinson, not, again, just because he has dreadlocks and built, you know, like a NFL player as an 18-year-old, but yes, he fits the mold. I also want to point out, Gerald, a thing that hasn't really been talked about, right? There is the killer bees, right? You have Brooks, Blue, Baxter. But now that Red has moved over there, you have Red, something, and Blue, right? Like, at 4th of July, maybe it's because it's on my mind this week. We need a name for this running back room. You have two guys, a Red and a Blue. You have the killer bees. You have, you know, I don't know. I'm workshopping it here. Brooks, Blue, Baxter is obviously the killer bees. I don't know. I'm going to have it by the end of the year. That is my mission and my statement on this podcast. I will put myself out there. I'll have the name.
Brooks, Robinson, Blue, and Baxter sounds like the founding four of like a consultant firm or like a law firm. I'm just going to throw that out there as well.
Well, Brooks Robinson, I didn't even think about it. That's a great MLB great. Brooks Robinson, Blue, and Baxter. Yeah, you're right. It sounds like, yeah, okay. Okay, we're getting closer. We're getting somewhere.
This is our golf foursome. It's me, Brooks Robinson, Blue, and Baxter, right? That's our golf foursome. So let's do it. Let's prediction time. Kyle. Who's the lead back, and what do you think their total yardage is for the year? You don't have to get it exact, but ballpark it for me.
So I think that the combination, go with me here, Cheater. The combination of Brooks and Baxter, they go, no matter what, they go for 1,700 yards between the two of them. I think it's going to come. I think it's going to come out to something like Brooks gets 1,050, or you know, something like that, just over 1,000. Because Sark, you know, you got to have your 1,000-yard rusher. But I think you know it could easily be that one's at 1,000, the other's at 800. Right? I think those are your two guys by the end of the year. And again, I think Blue could make me wrong. I think Keelan, maybe he's really you know bulked up and holding down. And but again, when it comes down to who sees the field. And we're talking about rushing yards, it is the guys who will do the most in pass protection. And that's why I think Baxter as a freshman may not take that spot immediately, and I'm banking on Brooks to take that step up to be the guy who doesn't see the field. So I think 1,000-yard rusher streak for Sark continues. It is going to be Brooks who does it, but I think Baxter is going to be nipping at his heels.
Okay, I'll allow it. I mean, I think I've already shown my cards here that I think Jonathan Brooks is probably the lead back. And I, again, Sark has not had a year as a head coach that he did not have a 1,000-yard rusher. Like, regardless of where he's been at, what the system was, even when he had a wide receiver winning the Heisman, he had a 1,000-yard rusher. And so mm-hmm. I think in a year where people are talking about Xavier Worthy as a Heisman dark horse, I really think Jonathan Brooks is going to hit 1,000. I'll just say it. I think he'll probably, maybe it's 1,001 yards. Maybe he goes into a bowl game with 990. And he needs to carry one time to get 1,000. But I do think that Jonathan Brooks, as the lead running back, is going to hit 1,000 yards. And I do think that, you know, I think behind him it probably gets a little muddier, but I really do think, like, Sark's offense and Sark philosophically has a running back that he likes to go to, and I think we saw it this year, even with Roshan Johnson being great, Bijan still had 170 more carries than he did, right? So I think there's a moment where, and I think, again, it's good that if, you know, Jonathan Brooks or whoever it is having struggles in a game, you have other people to lean on. But I think overall, like I said, Jonathan Brooks, and I do think he hits 1,000 yards.
So, Gerald, let me throw this one back on you. I don't think we had this in the run of show, but who leads the running backs in receiving yards out of this group?
That's a good question. You know what? I'm going to go Savion Redd.
Ooh.
Because I think he's not just going to catch it as a running back. I think they're going to split him out at wide receiver. I think they're going to put him in some weird. And I think he's also going to be the recipient of a couple of like pop passes and things like that. So I think by virtue of like him being a running back but also playing both positions, I think I just Kyled the system there, and I think it's going to be Savion Redd.
It's a smart play. From the Podstradamus of it all, I really like the way you set yourself up. I also like the idea of Savion Redd. Again, we know he's not. He moved from wide receiver to running back. He's not at the top of this depth chart where those guys are, but we've said he could take it. But I also like the idea of Savion Redd in garbage time, like we're up, you know, three scores on Kansas or on Tech. Yes, I know I just said we're going to be up three scores on Tech.
Speaking into existence.
I love it. And Redd, you know, is playing in the running back and catches a pass, but then they split him. Like, even though you're going a little more conservative with the second unit, he's like, no, I'll split out. Like, I just see him not wanting to leave the field once he gets on it and just beating somebody up, like getting 120 yards receiving against Rice or something. I don't know. I could see that. I could see that. But I'm actually going to switch it up, and I'm going to give it to my guy, K-Rob. I think Keelan Robinson's going to lead this year, the receivers, and I think he's going to not be a small number, right? Like, he had, I think, 270. If I looked at that right, it's not in front of me, but and three touchdowns receiving last year. Like, I think he's going to get close to doubling that. Like, I think he could go over 500 yards in receiving, which is huge when we tease our incredibly large wide receiver room in the next preview. Like, we're not just throwing to running backs. Like, there are a lot of dudes, pass catchers on this team. But if we're going to do that next week, you have to start it a little bit this week, because in Sark's offense, and especially last year with the skill talent in the running back room that they had to get the ball to. But again, I don't think that was a bug. I do think that is a feature where the running back will get the ball in multiples of ways. And so I like K-Rob to have a big year. Could also be split out a couple times, but also out of the backfield.
As a wise philosopher once said, this also describes the Texas running back room. I'm a dude. He's a dude. She's a dude. We're all dudes. Mm. Hey. And so that's it. All the dudes in the running back room, we'll see. Maybe we could be wrong. We probably will be. We are frequently. But so we'll be back next week talking about wide receivers, the bevy, another group that has an embarrassment of talent, but maybe not an embarrassment of production or pointable production. But we'll be back next week to talk about pass catchers and the like. So be back next week. And if you missed the quarterback discussion, go back to last Thursday. We'd love to have you check that out as well.
So now it's time for a bit of burnt orange lens as we look at the world through burnt orange colored glasses here. Gerald, Are you excited for the basketball tournament? If that doesn't ring any bells, maybe I'll say TBT. That's capital T, capital B, capital T basketball tournament.
I remember being excited. I don't remember why I was excited. I think Dexter Pittman's name came up, and that's probably why I was excited. Is that accurate? Is Dexter Pittman still on a TBT roster?
He, I think, was last year. I believe Pitt Sexy Dexy was last year. He is not, at least, and I haven't confirmed the entire league, he is not on Austin's Own, which is not a team created by a fantasy team created by a guy named Austin. This is actually created and coached by your boy, Javon Felix, who Javon Felix, that's right, folks, that name ringing out with some memories, is the creator and coach of Austin's Own, which is a team in, again, just take it back a step if you're not familiar, the $1 million winner take all, which I love, no second place here, tournament that has multiple regionals, ESPN's kind of summertime broadcast. It's a lot of former players of former colleges coming back together, dudes like really stretching their hamstrings because they don't hoop quite like this anymore. It's fun. It's good. There was the 3-on-3, and then this is the TBT, but the July 19th will be the Lubbock Regional, and as I mentioned, Javon is our coach of this one, but the roster includes some absolute like nostalgia bombs. Kerwin Roach, Longhorn from 15 to 19. Jacob Young, who played for UT 16 to 18, then went to play for Rutgers and maybe even someone else. Cam Ridley, 2012 to 2016, buddy, making his way back. Mike Kabongo started that, you know, maybe not started, one of the early Canadian Longhorns, 2011 to 2013. Clint Chapman, got to have a big man in there, 07 to 2012. Lexus Wongmini, who is probably as excited as anyone in the city of Austin for Wemby. He's very close with the Spurs organization. If you don't know that story, Google it. It's a really great story. And Jordan Hamilton, a player who, like, I'm not say ever forgot about, but I kind of forgot how good he was. I was looking at some highlights of his not long ago. Like, he was a really good college player. It didn't quite translate in the pros, but he was a big pick for the Horns as well. Hamilton, kind of the slashing winger, now, what, 12 years removed from his glory days. Let's see if he's still got the first step and ability to throw down at the hoop. There's three other guys on this squad who didn't play at Texas. I'm not even going to name them unless anyone knows Randy Bell, Xavier Williams, or Franklin Ogunnane. But it's a lot of Texas and a lot of nostalgia. Gerald, how do those names just make you feel?
I love it. Have you seen the official roster picture for Jordan Hamilton?
I have not.
I'm going to send it to you in the chat, and I want to see your live reaction because I was holding it together as I looked up the Austin's Own roster. I'm going to send it here and go. I want to hear Kyle's reaction. Right? Okay. I want everybody go like pause the podcast. Go to the TBT website and look up. It's just a good picture. I don't know what it is. It's the most professional basketball headshot I've ever seen. It's like he's opening up a basketball firm. Like, it's not a basketball team. This is a basketball firm. We do basketball seriously. We do the people side of basketball here.
That's right.
At Hamilton and Wongmini. I don't know what it might be, but
at Jordan and Hamilton. Yeah.
Exactly. No,
you replace the jersey with the same colored navy suit, maybe a crisp white one button down, and yes, he looks like a basketball consultant. Maybe it's because I've been watching a bit of Suits, but yes, he looks professional, and that look on his face is just so, it almost gives a little bit of Boris Diaw, like, just content, you know, like I'm pleased, you know. It's wonderful. I couldn't love that more. Thank you for sharing that live.
You're welcome. Also, big Cam Ridley. Always excited to see him.
There's some names. I will be watching every bit of this that I can find. It's on ESPN, I believe. At least I don't know if the first regional is. I think it is. But I also believe shouts to our guy Keenan Womack over at Orange Bloods. He is he's covering this. I believe he'll be out in Lubbock. So we'll be looking for those updates. It's a great roster and. No Prince eBay, you know, no Dex, but it's about as good as you can get when you combine, you know, our younger years when we could all still play basketball and not hurt. Maybe A.J. Abrams would have been a great add to this, just a dude who I that guy could be 60, still just going to rain it down from 28 feet. But yeah, I That's some great horns right there. Speaking of a great horn, Gerald, Elliot Spazieri made official what we teased on the podcast we thought might be happening, and he DM'd our Instagram after I posted it on there, giving us appreciation for shouting him out. But Elliot Spazieri officially going pro to pursue his dreams. He came in to UT to win a national championship. Most recent season looked like he was going to take us there. The number one player for, you know, the better part of the last year and a half in the country. He's just been the best college tennis player there is. And so they didn't win the national championship. Gerald and I kind of held our breath and hoped that he might come back for another crack at it. But it's hard to tell a kid don't follow your dream and go turn pro when you have the chance to do so. And so we're big-time fans rooting for Elliot Spazieri as he goes and joins the professional ranks.
I mean, we're sad to see him go, but again, you and I will never fault a kid for going and getting it done and doing what's best for their career. And especially, you know, going pro for the University of Texas is always great. I think we're sad to see him go. I think Texas is going to have to do a little bit of reloading, potentially through the portal. There's some names out there, potentially names that are related to players already on campus. But we'll leave that for another day. But yeah, I think Texas has some really, really big shoes to fill.
You know, the great lineage of Italian named Longhorns follows the Tarottis into the professional ranks. He's also trying to follow our next former Longhorn here, Peyton Stearns, who recently competed at Wimbledon for the first time. Just love watching her career. She does these firsts. She's got a long career ahead of her, but also a former number one player in college tennis, Peyton Stearns, made her way to Wimbledon. She did fall to world number 12, Marquetta. I don't think she used her last name. She's like one of those people who only uses the first name, like Cher. No, she doesn't. But Marquetta, I believe that's Von Drusova is how you say that. My Czech is rustier than it used to be, unless it's Kolacci versus Klobaniski. But Klobaniski, see, obviously my Czech is rough.
Yeah, it's no good. Just get it.
Yep. But Peyton Stearns fell, but nonetheless, always exciting to see Longhorns at Wimbledon. Bryce Elder recently named an MLB All-Star, a guy who was really good in the 40, and we thought, man, he's going to have a good little career in the MLB, has quickly changed good little career into, like, elite career. He has come on strong, I believe in only his second season in the majors. I think last year he got called up. So he is a starting pitcher, not the starting pitcher, but one of the starting pitchers on the MLB All-Star team representing those Atlanta Braves. I am so excited for Bryce. I think he's got a bright future ahead of him. The kid throws some nasty stuff, and he's looking as dominant at the big leagues as he did on the 40.
Yeah, just his second season. Drafted in 2020, called up in 2022. Absolutely incredible to see his pretty meteoric rise, I guess is the right to say. Yeah, we knew Bryce Elder was going to be a dude when he was at Texas. I mean, he's a five-pitch guy, so like, what more do you need from a starter? And again, always great to see Texas guys who've played at Texas and then go to the draft. It always sucks to see guys who commit to Texas and don't go to the draft, but that's another conversation for another day.
Keeping it baseball, Ivan Melendez broke the Hillsborough Hops single-season home run record with 16. Gerald, I believe he can mash. Can that man mash?
He can mash. He can rake. He can bomb. He can dinger. He can do it all. He can do it all.
I am also excited as you talk about guys quickly making it up the ranks. He should be in AA Amarillo soon, and I'm sure he'll continue to dominate there. Bright future. Get to the D-backs as soon as possible. They're having a great year, but you know, why not a little Melendez on top? That would be nice. But absolutely rooting for the Titanic. NBA free agency. I saw Jackson Hayes to the Los Angeles Lakers, which I believe spells the end of the Mo Bamba reign with the Lakers. I don't know that Mo, I've seen that one come across that he signed. I did see Corey Joseph agreed to a one-year deal with the Warriors. I believe as far as known at this point when we're recording it this week, and again, I may have certainly overlooked to hit us up in our responses, but of Longhorns on the move, those are the ones that I wrote down that I saw as I was scanning the NBA free agent Wire. Sorry, the only thing I care about in basketball right now is Victor Wembanyama. So it's hard for me to keep track of anything.
That basketball else. Frenchman, get it right.
Yes, that basketball Frenchman, which will make me laugh every single time. But yeah, we'll keep an eye for any Longhorns on the move. So you know who you need to root for next year, because if you don't have an NBA team, you usually can root for the Longhorns. But now you can just root for Wemby, for that basketball Frenchman. The MLB draft is right around the corner. On July 9th, it begins in the first round. In Texas recently, in D1 Baseball's 150, had the fourth most prospects of any school. They had Tanner Witt, Dylan Campbell, LBJ, and Lucas Gordon all in the top 100. Witt at 22, Campbell at 59, LBJ at 80, and Gordon at 96. Those are just with college players, of course. When you look at high school and everything else, they may have had some slightly different numbers on where they'll be ranked, but really nice to see for the Longhorns there. Hopefully we see that continue and again keep that pipeline going of Melendez and Elder and guys getting drafted and then getting up to the big leagues.
Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned just a moment ago, like Texas has like five in the pipeline, 250. Two are signees. You've got Travis Sakura and Will Gasparano, I believe is how it's pronounced. And then, pronounced, right? And then Tanner Witt, Dylan Campbell, and LBJ are ranked a little bit lower than those three, but also in the pipeline. So it's curious to see what Texas is going to look like next year. I'm always like weirdly... not weirdly, but I think I'm always anxious leading into the MLB draft because I'm like, Texas could be really good if a couple of these guys, you know, go sideways and decide that they want to play on the 40, but I'm not banking on it.
Yeah, and, you know, a million things can happen, right? Tanner Witt coming to the 40 was a big one, and then, you know, hoping that he would capitalize on his freshman kind of momentum. You saw Tommy John. So it's always, baseball's tough, man. It's the toughest sport to cover recruiting because, you know, your four biggest gets oftentimes leave and never show up on the 40, and it's tough even when you get here because there's a million different ways that a baseball career can go sideways. But we're rooting for all of those guys to continue on. Speaking of baseball, they finished seventh overall in home attendance, and that was in overall numbers, and that's without postseason, right? They didn't host the Super Regional in Austin. Again, you could thank Texas A&M for that. But so without those extra games, they were still seventh overall, fourth in attendance per game, if I did my math right. So the Dish, not as big as Mississippi State, where they can fill like 30,000, not quite, but a lot of people in there each night, or LSU, who I think has led that category for the past decade. But it is supremely well-attended and raucous, and I was just thinking about this from an SEC standpoint. A lot of the top Florida was in there. Tennessee lower, but they're up there somewhere. A lot of the top attendance numbers are in the SEC because they might be a better baseball conference even than they are a football conference.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe not better, but more consistent, right? I don't know if the top end is as dominant. I mean, you see Vandy and Alabama.
LSU? LSU, yeah. It's a question. Florida and LSU national championship this year.
I guess my point is I think it might be top to bottom more consistent than, because I think like the middle and bottom teams in baseball are better than the middle and bottom teams at football. Like, I don't know, maybe that might be the case.
I mean, yeah, I agree with you. That'll be a good podcast. We'll, once we make it to the SEC, we'll have some SEC baseball and SEC football guys on to hash it out. Closing us out here in this section, Rodney Terry bringing in East Carolina assistant Nick Mattson as a assistant on his staff.
Yeah, he was an assistant for Rodney Terry in some other spots at UTEP and Fresno State. I think, you know, Rodney Terry is going to continue to tweak and change his lineup, his coaching lineup, as he tries to dial in. He's got some pretty big expectations for this year, I think, now, based on what he's done recruiting and transfer-wise. So I think it's smart for him to get the guys he trusts in, and I'm curious to see how it goes.
All right, Gerald, let's take it home with our final section here of the week with Godzillatron. What are you watching on your giant screen?
Yeah, so I started watching today, started rewatch of Dexter. If you don't know Dexter, it's about a serial killer who has a kind of a moral code, and his whole thing is he only hunts folks that have gotten past the justice system in some way. It was like premiered in 2006, and like I forgot how really good and really awful, like, in the early seasons of that show. Like, it was really good through the first four seasons, but, like, it's also very, like, I see it in a new light, because I started watching it in college, and so, like, I didn't quite, like, have the level of media literacy I do now, and, like, so seeing things through a different lens, like, his relationship with his girlfriend turned wife eventually, and his relationship with his parents, and or his adopted parents, and, like, all those things have a different light. It's a really interesting rewatch, because I think I see it through a different lens, and so I've been really interested. And then what I'm going to be watching, gonna start a Mission Impossible rewatch this week. Me and my wife are about to dive in, because the new one comes out in a few weeks, and I don't think she's seen any of them past like the first couple, and I missed the last few just based on like life events. So the new one looks absolutely incredible, so we're gonna catch up and get up to speed.
Gerald, are there more Mission Impossibles or Fast and Furious at this point?
Fast and Furious.
Okay. I haven't seen the past couple Mission Impossibles. I wasn't sure how many I had missed. It is hard to think of a franchise with more than the Fast and Furious, and that's not a knock on it. I love the Fast and the Furious. Dexter. I never finished Dexter. I think I watched the first two or three seasons. I know some have said that's where it's best, but yeah, I never finished that. It was good. I was in college when I watched it. Anyways, Gerald, I started a series that seems a lot of people have. It's been pushed on Netflix, and it wasn't even for the Meghan Markle of it all, but I just had the time. One day I was working from home and you know, just needed kind of background, and so I threw it on and ended up getting distracted enough where I had to pause it and start watching it once I finished my work. If any of my bosses are listening, I work. But Suits is the show, and I'm not far into it. I'm maybe five or six episodes in. Have seen the princess or former princess plenty. She shows up early and it definitely steals the scenes. Like, she's just a great presence on screen of a predominantly male cast, or at least probably the top two billed people. At least she's a paralegal in this law firm and is great and kind of spunky and whatever. But it's a fun little story. I don't think it's prestige necessarily from what I've seen so far, but it's just solid. You know, it's like a guy who's just wonderfully smart. He has a superpower. He's so good. But raw and of the streets and didn't go to law school. And I'm not spoiling anything. That's all in the first episode. But it's fun and it's good. And it's this, you know, super mentor who's the best in the biz and their shenanigans so far. I'm early. It may really change. But I like it. It's perfect. Like, Gerald always, I think, comes up with this category, folding laundry, watching. Like, it's just perfect. You have it on. You're not going to be so mad if you walk and get water and you know, only hear 30 seconds and don't see it. Like, you're not going to miss anything. But it's good. It's solid. It's entertaining. The characters seem well written and interesting. It's certainly not bad. And so I have enjoyed Suits, and I will continue watching it. The only thing is, this became a solo show, and I can't tell exactly how my wife feels about the fact that she wasn't included in it. So I may have to start back over and rewatch these first six if it does become an Us show. I don't know. I thought about starting, and maybe I'll talk about this in the future. John Adams might be my next show. I've been meaning to watch that on HBO Max. But anyways, that I'll talk about it when I get to it.
So my wife is a big fan of Suits. I think she's seen it all, and like, I would say, I think she would describe it as like, it's a good like TNT USA show. It's like the best way to describe it. Like, it's not going to be your elite like premier programming, but it is a good TNT USA show. Like, and I think that's like, that is, if you get that, like, you get that. And so that's kind of where I think it would probably be described as. But that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodrich. Follow us on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We will be back next week doing some more preview shows. Next week we'll have our first new friends, BYU, on the show with us, and then we'll do the pass catchers, the wide receivers, and tight ends. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week, and until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. The running back, y'all.